Hello. Hello.
That's it, just hello. Welcome to the two hosers, maybe. What do you say? With vampire, this is not going over well. Let me try this again. We have a vampire and a witch here ready to go to school. Why don't you guys say hello to everybody?
Hello. Hello.
You guys are
No.
it's not working out, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you guys beat it?
Nothing
I gotta finish up with Adam here and then take you guys to school. Well, we got like 10 minutes and I gotta go. Are you guys already eating and everything? Okay, why don't you go get ready? Or go listen to your CD or whatever it is for 10 minutes and I'll come out and get you. Okay? Cool. I gotta get this or you're gonna be late for school. Okay. Well, that was a horrible cold open.
was awful.
Hello and welcome to episode 427 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Vancouver in March? God, it's got to be getting nice out there.
No, not really.
No. March, I don't like. February and March can. Not a fan. End of March is fine.
It's still pretty cold here.
Ides of March.
Okay.
I don't know why they get into that. You know what the good part about March is?
What?
St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yeah.
It is the best part. Not in Ireland. I don't think anyone, who cares? Amazon. You're going to buy you're going to buy one of those big green hats that you want to wear to St. Patrick's Day?
Sure, maybe a pot of gold.
Maybe a, all right. Well, don't get that's it. You can't host the Oscars now. That was it. It's all it takes, Adam.
Yeah, you just make a leprechaun reference and you're thrown out. That's it.
You're out. Yeah. Okay. Or a cereal reference. No cereal references.
Okay.
Same difference.
And definitely no leprechaun cereal references.
No. How could you even? Oh, I don't know. Let's not go down that rabbit hole because I want to host the Oscars next year. I'm sure I've tweeted nothing bad, mostly because I just don't tweet. I'm assuming that would be the way to go. Amazon, if you do want to buy your Lucky Charms, there I said it. I'm out. Guess I can host the Independent Spirit Awards, maybe the Golden Globes, but that's it.
That's right.
Click through our site and help us out.
Sure.
That's how it works. What's going on, Adam?
Nope, still nothing.
Still nothing. Well, it's still early in the AM here.
Yeah.
So
late here. I'm ready for bed.
What? This is just old man podcast.
Yeah. This is, hey, Adam, you still awake there? Yep.
All right. Hey, how do you mute the commercials on TV? That's the old man question.
Yeah.
Do you still mute commercials or do you fast forward?
Definitely fast forward.
But you have like a 30-second click ahead button, right?
I don't have that. I just have to do the double or triple fast forward.
Okay.
I'm really good at it, though. I'm really good at stopping right when the show comes back on.
Oh, yeah. When you get old, you're not. You won't be. That'll be the why your kids hate you.
Yeah, I'm not good with the remote anymore.
Yeah, you just, oh, Dad. I remember that was my Uncle Jack would do that. He, but that was his way back when, like, so all you could do is he had a mute button on the remote, which was probably, you know, the height of the technology at the time. So he would mute the commercials and then sort of just wander, you know, not actually get up, but just sort of mentally wander off. And you'd be two scenes in and he still hadn't hit, oh, yeah, leave the volume. And so you're like, I don't know what happened on. I've never seen this Saved by the Bell, so I don't know. Is Zach saying something funny, maybe?
Yeah.
Is Screech peaking? His entire career peaking right now in front of my eyes. You know,
is AC Slater about to wrestle somebody?
Is he about to get into the time machine and never age? Yeah. You see him lately? Like, wait a second! I don't even know how old you. You and Paul Rudd are just messing up my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, there you go. Hey, I saw that video of Jack playing hockey. By the way.
Yeah. What'd you think?
Great move.
Yeah, it was a sweet dangle.
Great looking video too. Shot through the glass with a hand cam.
I know, crazy.
And those, and you said the price on that camera is like $250 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
I know, it is crazy.
What are you? You're getting one, aren't you?
At some point, I just have to.
Well, at some point, get it now. I mean, like, think of the hockey he's going to play between now and when you buy it.
Yeah, the hockey season's almost over, so it's a question of, do I get something for baseball season?
Mm-mm.
The RX100 has really quite good video if there's enough light. Mm-hmm. The downside is, like, I don't know, do you know much about these codecs? Like, this, the RX100 shoots MP4s, which are good, but it's not full HD. If you go to the AVC HD,
it's not full HD.
Not in the MP4.
What is it? What does that mean? It was shoot 720.
It's like 1440 by something. Is that 720?
Oh, okay. What that is? Okay, so that's likely. I don't know for sure. That is likely older technology, and so basically, what they used to shoot when they first made the jump up to HD. It's still HD. Anything higher than 640 by 480 essentially is HD. So it's going to be 1440 by 1080, which is going to be interlaced, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think that's what
which
it
is fine, which is technically okay, technically speaking is probably 1440 by 540 and then they double the lines or something. Some crazy math they do. But 1440 is the squished version of 1920. Right. So that's what they were shooting with HDV. When HDV was briefly a thing, when you're shooting HD to tape, they had to have a way to compress it, and so you'd shoot it. Mostly, like, it looks fine. I shot with it a couple of times. Never bought a camera, thankfully. More just a pain in the ass than anything.
Well, and then there is an AVC HD, which will shoot the full HD, but the problem is the way the files come out, they're not really compatible with anything terms of me being able to edit them. And so then what you end up doing is you need to then use a program to convert it back, but then it's just becoming too much of a hassle, right?
Yes.
So the MP4 is easier just to work with, but you're losing a bit of resolution. And it also doesn't do the same frames per second. So I think that the video you watched, I think is 60 frames per second on that camera.
Yes.
And it just has a smoothness to it, right?
It looks very, very crisp and clear, which I don't like for movies. I do like for sports. It looks really good because you're doubling the frame rate. You're shooting more stuff. And also works great for slow motion. I mean, it just having that extra frame rate when you slow it down to 24 frames per second, that's 40% speed or you know, a factor of 2.5 slower. And it looks really cool.
Yeah.
The downside to shooting with editing with MP4 of anything, of any whatever frame rate you're using, is that it kind of bogs down your computer, especially if you have an older computer like you or me. It's MP4 is great to shoot with, but it's not fun to edit. It slows everything down. I tend to expand all mine to ProRes before I shoot anything, which makes much larger files, but it does cut like butter.
Interesting. Okay. But yeah, so I'm in the market. I'm in the market. At some point, I'm going to probably buy one of these things.
Nice.
I did a little bit of research, and for $300, you can get pretty marvelous stuff, especially for just sports. I don't intend to be making a ton of family videos with this, but I do, you know, feel like I'd take it to the baseball diamond into the hockey ring.
I think for baseball, you'd be fine shooting with your
60. Because And or even the RX100, because there's so much more light, I think it'll do a great job, and it's got a, you know, a wide angle and an ability to do some zoom. So I probably would do just fine, just not so much at the hockey rink. It's harder at the hockey rink.
And plus, you know, baseball's a lot more predictable of where the action's going to be.
Yeah, true.
So you do have that. All right, reminder, monthly photo challenge is a semi-stranger portrait. Hashtag that Two Hosers Monthly Challenge or hashtag Hey Hosers, and we'll check that out on the Instagram. Have you shot yours yet, Adam?
No, I have not.
Since I issued it 8 minutes ago?
Right. Nope. Still not done.
Fortunately, no strangers in your house right now, middle of the night.
Not that I know of, anyways.
Did you shoot anything interesting?
Still don't think I did.
I did a photo session with some friends' kids, which wasn't that interesting. Stuck with the white background. That's easy to do.
Okay.
But that reminded me, I'm looking forward to that home theater, which I've made zero progress on.
That was my next question. So,
No, I'll get that out of the way. I'm just thinking I might have to remodel our bathroom first if I want to, if I want to stay married.
Right. Okay. There's an order. There's a sequence of these events.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna do it. It's just I have to do this in the it's the right order. It's like Jack and the Rubik's Cube.
Sure.
All right. Photo challenge this week is beauty dish. Based on 2 weeks ago, we talked about the do-it-yourself beauty dish. So do you want to go first or second? Let's do mine first.
Okay.
All right. Here's mine. Look at that, eh?
Wow. What were you thinking?
I was thinking this would look amazing. That's all I was thinking. Just amazing.
Yeah. It's something. All right.
Could use a little bit of a hair trim, I think, though. Bit of a tennis ball head.
You sure do.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to...
A tennis ball is exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
Just paint that thing green and put Penn on it or Wilson.
Yeah, I was going to comb my hair or put a little gel in it or something just to get a little something for the picture. And then I thought, why bother?
So just tell us about the technical side of things here. What did you do here and why did you do this?
Okay. I copied... your photo.
That's sad but true. Yeah.
So let's look at your photo here.
Okay. Let's see that they do.
Oh,
have
hey, the good version.
The striking resemblance. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My daughter agreed to do a photo for me. And then I said, hey, wear your teddy bear jacket because she got one of these teddy bear jackets. I'm not up on fashion, but my wife tells me that these things are all the rage, this kind of fuzzy teddy bear jacket. And the funny thing is I'd never seen one before. And then my daughter got one when we were in the States. It wasn't expensive. It was like $25 at a department store. And so she really wanted it. She got it. And then in the next course of, I don't know, 2 days, I must have seen like a half dozen of these on full adults. Like my daughter was definitely the youngest person that I saw wearing one of these, wearing these jackets. So it's a thing, the teddy bear. Is it made its way to Germany?
I don't think so. I mean, okay. Besides mine, mine is actually my daughter's fleece turned inside out.
Yeah.
So the inside is that.
Yeah. Yeah. But we get it. You want a teddy bear jacket.
Yeah. I'm going to buy mine on Amazon and click through my site.
And the other thing was too, with my photo again. So it's pretty, this is a pretty simple photo with just, you know, the beauty dish is lighting the subject, camera left and kind of feathered, so that, you know, there's a fall off. I'm assuming just because the lighting on yours looks the same that you did the same thing, camera left kind of up and above and kind of feathered across. Yeah. And then one flash in behind the subject into the wall just to give that gradient effect on the wall and just kind of, again, just make it interesting. And the end, she had a number of poses and I just really liked this one. Like I just thought it was interesting. She did her hair. I liked the frizzy little, at first I thought, should I, she said, oh, I want you to fix the fluffy hairs. I'm like, no, I kind of, that's what I like about it. And so I went in and then post and I was like, I started to just, you know, kind of clean it up. I'm like, no way. Like it looks better to me without it. Plus that meant a whole bunch more work I didn't want to do.
Yeah. Forget that. So, I lit mine the exact same way last night. And I saw yours and said, oh great. I'm doing this. I'm just going to copy the lighting. Yeah. And then, hers is good. Obviously the second best picture this week. So that's pretty good. Silver medal.
Top two on the podium.
What color is your wall? Is that a wall in behind or is that the white background?
No, that's a wall. So it's a bluish wall. Like on the bottom gradient is the color of the wall.
Okay. That's what I figured. Cause the wall I was using, I could only use a gray wall. And so it was coming in very, very gray. And so I added a half CTB to that flash just to make it a little bit blue. To somewhat match yours, which is not perfect, but
we get
like in retrospect, I could have made the light a little bit bigger like yours and in the background. But again, you know, shooting the self-portrait is tough. I didn't quite nail the exact back arch with the head tilt that your daughter did. She's been watching some reality shows, evidently.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah. And so, nice try. Nice try, guys. Good job, Sarah-ish. But I think this one's going on your wall. Mine. Mine is. Going to go on your wall.
Right.
Now, the one really part where she definitely wins is her jacket fits her. So, I mean, I had to hold this around my neck with my hand. So, my hand is really, it takes away from the composition, for sure.
Your big man hand.
I was debating on photoshopping that out, but let's be honest, I'm not doing another second of work on this. If I'm not willing to spend a second of work trimming my eyebrows, then I'm not doing any Photoshop on this.
Right.
Gotcha. Although, in all honesty, two quick takeaways before I have to leave, is one, this is a very, very effective yet simple lighting setup that I'm going to use a lot myself. And two, we got good looking kids, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty good.
Did you also adopt?
No.
No. Okay. Never mind. Forget I said anything.
Yeah.
All right. Topic this week. Spoke to our good friend, Don Komarechka, who you probably know, doncom.ca. Check him out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I think he's the last guy on Google+. He's checking out everywhere. Did I say Instagram? Check him out on Instagram. The Snowflake guy.
Yeah.
He's been on the show many times, has his own podcast called Photo Geek Weekly, which I've been on a couple times. And I wanted to talk to him about the death of magazines, and in particular, the magazine Outdoor Photography Canada, which he was a contributor for a number of years, and it's officially out of business, as are many magazines. So I won't, without further ado, here's me and Don Komarechka.
Been a frustrating point of my day. We're in the middle of a crazy blizzard and 100 kilometer an hour gusts of wind and everything. And so last night, I hear a really strange metallic knocking on the outside wall of our house. And I look outside, and I don't know what you call it, fascia or whatever the roof siding stuff is. That had completely come undone and was slamming into the side of the house and into the one of the windows too, which was not cool. So that was kind of an emergency fix today, where I had to climb up a ladder in a windy blizzard and haphazardly smash some nails back into this thing to just keep it there. And that's kind of a fool's errand. Maybe that was a dangerous thing for me to do. I definitely did not fix it properly, but at least it won't smash any glass. So that has been my day thus far.
Did you have a spotter on the ladder?
Yes, my wife was at the bottom of the ladder making sure everything was good and solid. I'm envious of her. She was actually able to sleep through most of it, but every time there was a bang on the wall, it woke me up. And so I got about 2 hours of sleep last night.
Good times.
Yeah.
So it was a couple days ago, we took the kids out and some families went for a hike because it was a little over 20 degrees here. So I feel your pain.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Well, especially when our furnace died less than a month ago, and we had to get an emergency. Like the same day the guy red tagged it, I had to have a guy come in and or a team of people and install a brand new one. It was 27 years old. You know, it should have been replaced before, but I was hoping for one more winter. We do have a backup. You should see this. It's an absolutely outstanding Victorian-era parlor stove that burns coal. And that's in my studio right now. We just put that in. So that can heat the house if the power goes out. So at least we're safe.
But that's kind of the move over here. Like, well, not coal, though. They're all about wood, like burning wood.
You know, and wood, it bothers me because if you've got like a perfect mature like silver maple tree, it's sucking down so much CO2 out of the atmosphere doing its good tree duty. And then you cut it down and you put all of that CO2 back into the air. It always kind of bugged me.
I don't know who's burning maple. I hope nobody, because maple's kind of gorgeous.
We burn maple all the time over here. You see all the people selling firewood, they're selling like a mix of maple and ash.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
What was the two best woods for baseball bats?
Oh, well, there you go.
Ash all being those my baseball favorite. Bats. Ash being my favorite, although, you know, it's not trendy to say so, but no.
But anyhow, if you burn, and people have like a bad thing on coal too. I mean, anthracite coal burns completely smokeless. It's the cleanest solid burning fuel that you could possibly use. Coal power plants, on the other hand, use bituminous and other types of really dirty, awful coal, and that stuff we shouldn't use anymore. But I'd rather not pollute the atmosphere with cutting down trees that are so helpful. Anyhow.
Hey, me too. Me
hey,
too.
Hey, we're photographers, aren't we?
Apparently, yeah. Which leads me to what we wanted to talk about is I read an article on one of the blogs. Ironically, I think it was one of the blogs.
Petapixel, I think.
Would have been. Is that where I would have seen the article about?
That's where you would have seen the article that I wrote about the closure irony. Of one of my favorite institutions.
I loved the irony of that.
That a magazine is closing down and you're reading about it on a digital publication.
Well, I mean, in my mind, nah, it's not fair to say. It's not fair to say that it is the reason they closed down, but it's part of it, and or maybe it's not. Maybe you'll tell us about that. But fill in the people who don't know, what happened to said magazine? What's the full name of the magazine?
Outdoor Photography Canada Magazine. And this is a magazine that I've been writing for quite some time. They originally published me back in, oh geez, this was 2010 or 2011, I think. Issue number 20, whenever that came out, with an article on snowflake photography. And I've been, if people have been following my work, that's kind of been a cornerstone of my portfolio ever since then. But I, and we'll kind of go through the narrative, but I got word not too long ago that they kind of ran out of money. They were not going to make the next funding cycle. They didn't have enough funds to go to press for the latest issue, and that was supposed to come out over the holidays this year, and they don't have the funds to push forward. It's basically there's no momentum left in this operation, and that's kind of sad because it was a really tight ship. There was one primary full-time staffer, and that was the editor, and he did everything. He did the editing, the marketing, the layout, everything else, in order to keep the costs down. And there was the contributors that were paid well, but it's a quarterly magazine, right? So it's not like mm-hmm. we're getting paid on a very regular basis. Plus a few feature photographers that would contribute feature stories, of which I've had a few. And the ad revenue and the cost of operations, the cost of printing, all of those things go up, subscriptions go down. And you're left with a magazine as much of a skeleton crew as it could have been, was still not able to survive. And I think that's true of the entire industry at large right now, actually.
Right. So now, the editor that you're talking about, did he also create the magazine?
Yep. He is the founder of Sunlight Media, the corporation that published it. Okay. And so Roy Ramsey, great guy. And he gave me that chance early on.
Wait, great name, too.
Yeah, it's just a nice alliteration there. But I mean, as a small business owner, you know, as a photographer, you're an entrepreneur, right? So you got to try and say, okay, well, what do I have that's valuable? Where can I shop it around? And so I was, trying to get my snowflakes. I was contacting Canada Post and different magazines and the Royal Canadian Mint. And some of those other things ended up successful years later. But I sent an email to the editor. And I'm really lucky he responded to me because he got a lot of offers for articles from so many people. He could have easily just overlooked mine. I remember him telling me he got at least a dozen a day. And he didn't respond to most of them. But he liked the images and said, can you write an article on spec for me? And I'll take a look. So, I'm not going to get paid anything if he doesn't run with it, but maybe somebody else will. So I wrote the best article I could possibly write, and then I rewrote it and double-checked it and sent it to colleagues and friends that had, degrees in literature and language and stuff like that, just to make sure that this was the best possible article that it could be. Because when you get an opportunity like that, you have to make the best possible impression. There's so much competition for that kind of space. And I ended up getting the cover shot on that issue. It's my very first magazine cover shot, and I've got it framed on the wall here in my studio. Now
I have one kicking around my office here somewhere in Germany.
Oh, perfect.
You sent me one.
I did. And part of the fun of that was, okay, I got my foot in the door. I'm getting a paycheck from this magazine. What else can I do? I mean, how can I keep this relationship going? And I noticed their website was pretty crap at the time. It looks archaic now. When we're recording, it should still be up. I did a redesign for them like 6 or 7 years ago. But I said, hey, you know, I got some background in web design. Some parts of your website feel a little bit broken. Would you mind if I kind of poke in there and see if I can fix things up a little bit? And I did, pro bono. And then eventually I did a full website redesign, I didn't charge them really my going rate, and I don't do that stuff anymore, but I wanted to keep that relationship going. And I kept up with maintenance on the website and so on and so forth until an opening came for a regular contributor to be added to the magazine. And I was given the sort of the right of first refusal there on the caveat that I have 48 hours to submit a completed article and all of the images. And that started me writing with them for the Beginner Basics column. And it was a ton of fun. You know, writing for a magazine is easy. Like, I love writing. And so when you're given a task of, okay, you know, submit 750 words of a topic of your choosing and some images that you like, and the editor will run with it. And none of my articles were ever refused. So it was a really fun experience to be a part of that. And of course, it adds credibility to your name. It adds... an audience to your work and what have you, more than just the pay. I'm lucky that I had that experience, because I don't think many new photographers get the ability to kind of jump in to a magazine in like a columnist type role these days, especially when more and more of them are closing down.
Well, you say get an opportunity. You made the opportunity. That's a big distinction. And that's a whole separate conversation. Actually, that will be part of your TED Talk, which if you haven't done already, I'm surprised.
I haven't done one yet. I'd love that opportunity.
Yeah, I can see it. I mean, honestly, at this point in your young career, I wouldn't imagine it be one of those 90-minute ones. But do they go that long? I don't know. The ones I watch tend to be shorter. But
I think like 15 minutes max is the ones that I've seen.
That's the wheelhouse. And I think, honestly, like I started out... sort of kidding, but now I'm not kidding. You should get on that. That's something that I think you've already earned. I mean, I don't know anybody who has hustled more than you.
That hustle is a difficult thing, because first of all, you have to have something unique, and that's a challenge in its own right. Especially in the photographic world, where everything has been done before for the most part. At least that's what I've been told. And then you have to try and reinvent that idea. And bring that full circle to say, all right, I've got an idea that I think hasn't been done before. Let's try that. Let's go down that rabbit hole. And sometimes there's been some weird opportunities. Like I was experimenting with ultraviolet fluorescence of minerals and things like that. And I tried a couple of bugs. I realized a cicada would glow quite nicely. Around the same time, I was approached by the producers of a Discovery documentary titled Mosquito. And they wanted me to shoot some mosquitoes on pins, completely in focus front to back, but rotating on the pin. So I had to do procedural focus stacking, to focus stack the entire thing front to back and then rotate it 1 degree and do that again and do that in such a way that it was consistent for video work. Ooh. And yeah, I bought the hardware to do that. Cognisys makes their stack shot. They've got a little rotation platform and everything. And I figured that all out. But I figured... what happens if a mosquito fluoresces under ultraviolet light? Turns out it glows a science fiction shade of blue in certain areas, like the eyes and certain body markings. And as soon as they saw that, their shot list for me basically tripled. I shouldn't even call it a shot list. They didn't know what I could produce, but they knew that they wanted that in the documentary. And that footage that I shot of mosquitoes in ultraviolet became the title card for that documentary film. And they didn't even know they wanted it before I had presented hey, what about this? And it was just wild and crazy enough that they used it as the attention grabber right at the beginning.
Now, I don't want you to give away all that in this podcast. Save it for your TED Talk, man.
All right, I'll shut up.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there when you do it in Vancouver, and then that's kind of oddly that's a meeting that's meeting us halfway.
Well, you can't ask to be part of a TED Talk. They have to invite you. So maybe somebody organizing a Vancouver TED Talk will hear this and ring me up. That'd be nice.
Ted's I'm pretty good friends with Ted McGinley from TV fame. So he might reach out.
Okay.
You have no idea who Ted McGinley is.
I have no idea who he is.
Oh, man. All right. Back to the magazine stuff. So how long, when was outdoor photography? I know we're focusing on this one magazine, but we're going to get to all magazines in a second. When was Outdoor Photography Canada founded?
I'll
cut this part out then.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were at 46 issues and 4 issues a year. So like 11 and a half years.
When you found them or when they were done?
So I came in at issue 20, so I was in right, okay. at about the halfway point.
Okay, so they've been around for a little while. I mean, not an easy business. And for them to go out of business is not surprising, given the climate. What does this mean for print magazines in general?
Well, you have to look at print media in general. Like, we're talking newspapers and newsprint and everything else, because they're printing less. And as soon as you start printing less, the cost of printing will go up. And newspapers right. and magazines aren't quite the same thing, but we can call them all periodicals. And the number of them being moved off the store shelves or through the mail system is continuing to decrease. And so production costs go up. But at the same time, like you read the article on Petapixel, it kind of proves the fact that people get their news instantaneously through online means, photo blogs, or whether it's DP Review or the rumor sites or F-Stoppers or any of that stuff, and you don't have to pay a penny for any of it. That I think is one of the key things. Now, the quality of the content might be subjective, but the constant flow of it, like dozens of articles a day, you'll pick and choose the ones that you're most interested in. Where a print magazine, the quality per article is going to be much higher. But then, and OPC was great for not including an overabundance of ads. I mean, there were ads; they had to be. But it didn't turn into what my now local newspaper is that I don't even pay for. It just shows up once a week on my doorstep. It's basically a bundle of ads that I use to start fires in the stove, right. or my wife uses to put underneath her paintings when she's painting. That's the only purpose we have for it. If you were to look through it, there might be 3 or 4 local interest stories, and the rest of it is hundreds of advertisements.
That nobody sees, which is the irony of it.
Isn't it, though? I mean, sure, you might see the ones on the outside wrapper, and that's about it.
Right. We deal with the same thing here, except for it's very easy to get rid of. We get a lot of flyers, a lot of the, the German equivalent of Best Buy or whatever you know. And those would come all the time, but you simply put a sign up saying, hey, no more, and they can't deliver them anymore.
Yeah, but here we have community mailboxes, right? So I can't put a right. sign on the community mailbox saying, hey, by the way, don't give me any of these flyers. They're just not going to... It's not a possible thing here. If we had door-to-door delivery, yeah, I could do that.
Right, right. So, I make a distinction myself with newspapers and magazines, oddly, which is... both are very, very sad. It's sad that it's going that way. To me, maybe it's not. Maybe I'm in the minority. But I used to. I don't anymore. I used to love magazines.
I was inspired by magazines growing up. I mean, National Geographic, Canadian Geographic. Some of the articles in Maclean's and others were very provocative, interesting. And this was, of course, in the era before I had the internet or before this content was generally available online. Mm-hmm. And now you see magazines that or newspapers that put up a paywall. And okay, well, you get like 5 free articles a month and then you have to pay or you don't get anything.
Or use and a different device or.
Yeah, or and when I see that, I just say, okay, well, I'm not going to read that then because my attention span is so short that there's other interesting things that's going to take my time and and not my money.
I'm part of the problem too. I say problem. Maybe it's not a problem. Maybe it's just the way of the world. But I mean, I grew up, I loved Sports Illustrated. That was mostly a lot for the pictures. Even before I was a photographer, I loved the photographs. And then later on, my favorite magazine became Vanity Fair, which I didn't particularly care about all the articles. It was very rare, but I subscribed because, again, the photography was amazing. Like, even in the ads, it was great. But generally, you had Annie Leibovitz taking the pictures for the stories. and it was very inspirational for photography.
Well, and of course, now you look at a lot of magazines that, you know, it's a half written and it's a half visual media, right? You have to have both. Now, photography magazines are different, of course, because the writers are photographers. But outside of that, in the general population of magazines, their staff of photographers is either incredibly small or non-existent now, mm-hmm. when they would have been a very core ingredient of the magazines. But if you got to cut something and... oh, Joe, you can write, but you've got a Canon Rebel, don't you? You talk about that sometimes. You want to go use that and take the pictures for your articles now? And then the overall quality of the imagery goes way down, and then the subscribership also decides to follow suit, and it's just it's a never-ending cycle.
That is a cycle that happens, but again, hard to argue with results. Some fewer people, I guess, are making money. Whoever that's regardless. Okay. Do you remember your first time you experienced, like, your first digital magazine?
No. I hated those ones that had, like, the little artificial kind of page flip thing. Like, they're mm-hmm. trying to be, like, a paper magazine, but they're just going to give that same experience on the computer screen. And I thought, no, just let me flip from page to page like a PDF. Come on, please.
Yes.
And that... I don't think that I've read many of them in that sense. It was almost like, if it's not in print, it's just going to be a website form. It's not going to be a digital edition of something. I never went there.
I don't mind eating vegetarian food. I don't like it when they try to make it taste like meat.
I wouldn't mind to try that that Impossible Burger from A&W. That sounds rather intriguing. Right. But I don't think that would be a staple of my diet.
Right. So I remember my first time when a buddy of mine, he's one of the first people I knew who bought a iPad. And I think it was the version one of the iPad way back when. Mm-hmm. And he was visiting me in Germany and he showed me, hey, check this out. And obviously I'd heard of the iPad. I hadn't seen it yet in person. And he showed me, I think it must have been GQ magazine or something, the iPad version. And he said, "Oh, it's amazing because look, like you get partway through here and after the pictures, and then look here. You know, you want more information? You just click on this little button, and the video plays."
Well, and OPC tried to do a number of those things. Outdoor Photography Canada, I forget what issue, but there was the cover shot had a little QR code, I think, that linked to a video of the people mm-hmm. that were shooting that cover shot. And I thought that was kind of a novel way of rolling some digital content that couldn't be in the magazine as an added bonus to somebody. Mm-hmm. And they, in the last years, introduced a digital version, as almost every magazine does. And that would have, you know, lower costs on their end. But you still need to get people to subscribe. One way or the other, you need people to be paying you money on a yearly basis. And if those numbers just keep going down and down, there is a point where you're sustainable and you cross that line and you drown. It's not like a very large corporation that could have handled, you know, millions of dollars of debt to move them up and down. With a small operation, if you hit that level, there's no way that you can kind of bounce back from that slowly over time.
The one positive to the digital distribution model that I took away is obviously when I moved over here to Germany. And so the magazines or the whatever content that I wanted, I could get digitally. And, you know, you can get, you know, for example, Vanity Fair magazine, but you'd get the European version and everything would be like a month late. And there's all that lag time. And not that you needed all the info on the financial crash immediately, but it was nice to have it sort of semi up to date.
Yeah.
And so that was a positive, but overall my experience was very lackluster. I hated it. I ended up walking away and I ended up generally, I mean, I find my photo inspiration stuff online. Now you pretty much everywhere you look, you can find all the pictures you would normally, I guess the difference being that they would typically present them to you. Now you have to go look for them.
I suppose so. But if you're going to those photo blogs on a regular basis, which I do because, you know, I'm looking for stories for my podcast, Photo Geek Weekly, And I dig through just kind of the geekiest stories on, you know, Petapixel and F-Stoppers and DP Review and a lot of the other ones. And sometimes they even spill over into the mainstream media when I'm trying to find the sources for this stuff. But if you are, you know, looking to buy a new camera and you're a Canon shooter, you're going to go to canonrumors.com and you're going to find your content there. You know where this stuff is because Google will show you kind of the well of knowledge and you just keep going back there time and time again. And that is the new way of things. There's, we're not going to go back to print. As much as I enjoyed having a tangible print magazine. That being said, though, I mean, there are certain exceptions to that because just recently I sold through the entire production run of my book Sky Crystals, which is a big, like it's a 9x9-inch hardcover 300-page book. I printed 3,000 copies of that and I sold them all. Most of them direct sales, not even retail or on Amazon. So people do still want a tangible item in some cases. You know, it's great when I'm at a camera club convention or something and I can sell books and sign them and what have you. I will still produce physical hardcover books and I've got three ideas for them in the works. But that will disappear too in time. I don't know if that market will even exist the way that it has for me in 10 years.
I tend to agree. I still like books. I still buy books. Well, I buy them on Amazon now. I don't go to the bookstore. But again, part of that is a function of me living in Germany where there's no English bookstores.
Right.
Were I to live in Vancouver, I would still go to the Indigo or whatever it's called. I think it's Chapters is gone or whatever's gone on. But I still very much like the bookstore. And one of the things I like about, oddly, I'd never thought of it until this actual second. One of the things I like very much about books is one of the things I like very much about movies shot on film. Digital cinema right now is fantastic looking. It really is at the top of its game, right? Like, it's probably just going to get better, but I don't care if it does. It looks great.
Well, some of the biggest blockbusters were shot on Kodak film, even this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I did not know that. I only saw one movie this year. And so, again, a function of living over here. But one of the things that I like the best about watching a movie shot on film is nothing to do with resolution or that film look, I guess maybe a little bit, is the nature of grain. And not that it exists, but it is, and this is right up your alley, each frame is a snowflake of grain.
Yeah, well, and it's also something where if I were to read a classic novel, I could go into a used bookstore if they still exist. Maybe that's just part of Amazon now. But and buy for a couple of dollars, you know, a copy of Oliver Twist, if that's what I wanted to read. And the tangible feel of that, I don't know, it would bring me back more to the artist's intentions. And some people will say that too about listening to vinyl versus a digital medium. And you're saying that too about recording on an analog medium versus a digital. It's a different feel. It's a different experience, let's call it. But I think that the physical periodical doesn't survive. The tangibleness of that is not as valuable as it would be, you know, picking up an old book that has that old book smell or
that book smell.
Or having that grain that just changes the experience. So it's printed on a paper that is, it's meant to be temporary and kind of thrown away by the time the next one comes out, right? And it doesn't have that the same sense of longevity and permanence.
Right. If you read, you know, for example, if you read Moby Dick or The Great Gatsby, the books are probably physically not the same size in your hand. They're probably different heft, different paper, different font size. And so that, to me, that is the on a larger level, that is each book being a snowflake.
Yeah.
Which is, this is all kind of esoteric stuff, but what color is the cover of Catcher in the Rye? The classic version, Catcher in the Rye, do you know?
I'll say red.
It's red. It's a red cover. I mean, you can get it in other ones, but the classic one is a red cover.
I mean, that's the one I remembered, anyhow.
It's iconic for that. I think it was yellow font. And so, but see, that's part of it. Now, if you get that digitally, that's not going to be the same. And you can have I'm sure you could have the option. And that's a whole nother conversation, the paralysis of choice, which kind of blows my mind. But I think back to the old days when CDs were out. And I was not a humongous music head, but I would still buy CDs. I'd probably buy a dozen CDs a year, which means I would spend, I would buy a CD a month.
Well, and my wife just spent like $20 on 20 different songs from 20 different artists because she's heard them on the radio, you know, new pop stuff that she likes. And now she can, you know, put her playlist together so easily. And it, mm-hmm. you know, a CD is, of course, a digital media. It's not going to be, you know, something that if you were to buy a CD, it's going to be vastly better in experience than just downloading a single song, right?
No. But again, when I would buy them, this was prior to the Apple Music Store and prior to Napster even, etc. But the idea that I had no problem spending $18 a month on one CD, on 15 songs, honestly, on three songs and 12 fillers.
Right.
It's you know, how we got to Napster in the first place. But I had no problem doing that. Like, and never occurred to me that, you know, I mean, I wasn't married, didn't have kids. It was, you know, no reason, nothing else to spend my money on. But now you think about it for I don't know what it costs. Is it 10 bucks a month for Spotify?
I'm not even sure. I mean, I'm not a huge listener to music. I've got a nice classic rock radio station that plays all the stuff I like to listen to, and I don't mind listening to the ads there. And I only listen to that when I'm driving. So yeah, I'm a Netflix binge watcher, but not for music.
Oh, I missed again. Living in Germany, it was German radio. I missed the notion of radio. There was a time where I wanted to get CDs and then rip those CDs and make my own CDs of the songs I liked in the order I liked, and I was quite a big nerd about it. I would this is even before that you could find these little audio clips on the internet. I would take the movies I owned and pull the little quotes that I liked and kind of mix like movie quotes in between songs and that kind of thing. I would love doing that. But then it got to a point where I was like, you know what? I prefer the radio because I don't mind hearing a bad song. You kind of have to have the bad with the good, the sweet with the sour. That's kind of the experience. And yeah. I feel like having everything on demand all the time is ruining us. I watch it ruin my kids. My kids who are 5 and 7, they don't get to use the iPad or the iPod, the iPhone, nothing like that. Like,
well, my daughter, who's 2.5, going on 3 now. I mean, we've got it was one of the first laptops that has a touch display on it. And so she'll maybe, we don't give her a whole lot of time to watch videos and stuff on YouTube, but she'll just watch like 3 minutes of something and go on to something else and go on to something else. And go, like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a manufactured short attention span, and she just clicks on the video that she wants after she's had her fill of the first one. So I try to train against that. I try to spend more time
Good
doing
luck.
Single things. I you know what? I'm fighting against the grain for that. You're right. It's going to be a tough battle. But when springtime comes, you know, she'll be out and we'll be doing some gardening and things like that. And she really enjoys, you know, playing and planting and watering things and what have you. So you got to make it an experience, right? Everything has to be a valuable experience. But when that experience is no longer of value because there's something better or more efficient or more convenient, and you're not losing anything in the process, that is the death of the magazine.
And that's where we're at. Now, I'm an outlier when it comes to the parents and not letting my kids do this, etc. It doesn't matter. I'm still fighting a losing battle because we'll be in the car and it'll be, Daddy, can we hear that song? Like everything in life is on demand.
Yep.
Right now. Like for everybody, no matter how old you are, you can have whatever you want digitally whenever you want it. And that just might be, that to me is the future. There's going to be no random play.
Well, and you know, the funny thing is, you know, I'm starting to plan what we're going to be putting in our gardens, you know, weird, exotic, unusual, edible plants. And if somebody isn't selling it in Canada, I can't get it. I mean, I've got to like get an import permit and then they have to get a phytosanitary certificate or whatever it is to ship me a plant from a foreign country. And it takes like 3 months of paperwork in order to do that. The physical world is far more difficult than anything digital. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm sure I could buy some seeds, but I'm lazy. So the idea of, you know, magazines going away is something that is changing the photographic industry in a way, I think, that, I mean, us as people that might make money from certain things in photography. I mean, you're more videography than I am, but I was even just the other day. You know, you got to keep the latest and greatest. I had a company out of Norway. I think it was a public broadcaster that asked me to shoot some footage for them, but they wanted it at 422 10-bit 50 frames per second.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well, I'll have to buy an external recorder to do that because the cameras that I have can do that as an HDMI output, but can't record that internally. Mm-hmm. And so I'm actually losing money on that job because of the equipment costs that I'm investing in so that I could then move forward and say, okay, if anybody asks and anything else that I can shoot in the future, it's going to be the highest possible quality, which is going to be more and more in demand.
Have you bought that unit yet?
Yeah, I got the Atomos Ninja V or Ninja 5.
Right.
I don't
know. Okay, I've heard of that.
Yeah.
I was going to say maybe rent it, but maybe don't now.
Well, no, because it's one of those things where I'm going to have a key moment where I'm going to be off on, like maybe when I'm off in Iceland, I'm doing an Iceland workshop in the second half of October this year. And, you know, I can bring that along with me if I get some beautiful auroras and I can shoot some really high quality footage of auroras, you know, once I've got all of the photographers set up and everything else. There are so many times where it will be useful that I won't consider renting it, but if I have it along, I will get money-making footage. So like, even like today, when we've got a crazy blizzard outside, just shoot some high frame rate footage of the snow swirling about, and that, you know, put that in the catalog because that could be useful for some from some documentary in the future.
I will say to our listeners that this is what Don just described to you is generally. What would we say? It's generally a bad business idea to do that, to buy something, to build your parachute on the way down. However, Don is an outlier. Like, you really are. You will put this to good use. This thing will pay for itself.
It goes back to the beginning where I was talking about the Discovery Channel mosquito documentary. I had to spend well over $1,000 on an automated focusing rail and rotation platform that's usually used for 3D modeling stuff. And I knew that I would find many more uses for that in the future to do macro focus pulls through things and to rotate objects. That exact technique requiring that equipment has been used in four or five documentary productions. What was the latest one? Would be One Strange Rock from National Geographic.
But we must acknowledge that you are the outlier and not the rule.
Yes. But, I mean, anybody can be an outlier if they so choose to be. Mm-hmm. If they eat, sleep, and breathe what they do, if they dream about what it is and really try, I don't want to say try your hardest. I mean, try as hard as anybody could possibly try. And if you can't try that hard, then do something else that you can try harder. And excel in that direction because you have to play to your strengths.
Okay, so I'm thinking of starting up a magazine, okay? So that's what I'll do. I'll just try hard.
Yeah, there's always more to it, as you so clearly put it.
I'm not starting a magazine. I think it's all gone digital and the future is digital, whether good or bad.
There's a resurgence in vinyl right now.
Every 5 years there is.
I think that there, at least I saw some stats from the UK, that the, vinyl sales are higher than CD sales right now. That shows you how valuable CDs are. That doesn't mean that vinyl is really moving anywhere. It just means that CDs are even less than that.
Right.
But there is a crave for some people that want to go back to a more traditional, simplistic lifestyle. You know, technology is great. It's wonderful. It keeps us connected, and the latest and greatest phones and computer processors and everything else make everything faster and better, and that will continue ad nauseum. But does it make the experience any better at all? And you know, you look. I've got a bunch of film cameras, and I need to use them more often because I enjoy the feel. I enjoy the process, actually. I just don't give myself the time to explore that as much as I would like. And some of those images have actually been published. It's not just for the fun of it. I enjoy experiencing stereoscopic 3D photography, which is a completely dead art. But when I show people stuff on, I've got the new Red Hydrogen smartphone that has a no glasses required 3D display, and I don't tell them that they're about to see something in 3D, Some people just spit out swears or they just their jaw drops because they don't expect to see it jump out at them. And right. That's fun. And technology can enhance experiences in some ways, just like that. So long as we kind of stick to our roots and make sure that we are all about the art, we're all about the personality in what we do and not get caught up in all of the technicality of it.
Well said. However, art, rest in peace magazines.
Yes, rest in peace magazines, especially Outdoor Photography Canada magazine. And I was with them for a good number of years. I had a good run. Now, it did, like, it was a piece of the puzzle in terms of, like, I would get paid between $500 and $600 every 3 months. It's not anything that I could say was going to, you know, pay the bills. But it was something, right? It was always going to be improving things. And at the same time, closing down, we're recording this on February 25th, and as of February 28th, the Arcanum is closing down, which I had been a part of since the beginning, which was an online mentorship program, kind of a master apprentice sort of feel, pioneered by Trey Ratcliffe, and it did not succeed either, because they couldn't get the funding to build an audience to, you know, funnel more apprentices in to really keep the system running. And that was a purely digital construct too. So it's not just one aspect of the industry that could be hurting, because I do a lot of physical in-person workshops and I sell out of a ton of them. And minor plug, you can find those at doncom.ca/workshops. But they're really, really popular when you can learn hands-on from somebody. Learning at a distance is less popular because could you get a similar experience by buying a video course? And there's tons of those available, and that's a one-time fee that you could rewatch and rewatch. Well, yeah, people make a lot of money at that right now. So it's all about finding that balance between technology and experience, I think. And we have to be cognizant of that in everything that we do as photographers, especially if we're trying to make money with our craft.
Part of the thing, just in closing, is when we, Adam and I, started this podcast, like we very much appreciate the digital world, because this would not exist if not for the internet and, you know, all those ones and zeros, etc. It doesn't work like that. But we try to record it as quote unquote analog as possible. Like we do not edit anything. All of our and that everything stays in, any misspeaking like that. We treat it as if it's a live radio experience.
I think it's more valuable that way. It just makes it feel like somebody is listening into your conversation, like they're just a silent party sitting at the same table, drinking a beer, and listening to you guys chat back and forth. That's how it comes across to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we're shooting for. And so, you know, still using part of the digital, but keeping 1 foot in the analog world as well. But I wish magazines was, just to keep it on topic, I wish magazines would still exist like that. But I gave up on them a long time ago, so I'm probably part of the problem. And I do read the blogs myself. I mean, you kind of have to. That's where you find this particular content.
So, exactly. And advertisers know this. And the advertisers are going towards that market as well, right? So you have all of the big camera manufacturers and tripod and all the equipment manufacturers and the software vendors and everything else. They've got a marketing budget. And previously, that marketing budget was magazines and, I don't know, maybe outdoor advertisements or something else. And their budgets have shifted quite drastically to online, to those photo blogs, to like run syndicated ads through certain systems and on YouTube and everywhere else, because that's where their audience is. And so the entire thing comes full circle. And there's always going to be that marketing budget. You got to look after where the audience is. And where is the audience today? It's not reading magazines.
I'm sad for my kids who will not be able to be disappointed by doing the Mad Magazine fold-over thing in the back on the way to a Soyuz.
You know what? I'm sure you can get some old issues of Mad Magazine and just cut out all the fold-overs and give them a whole pile of them to have some fun with.
Yeah. They might just look at me like, what are you doing? Like, what is it? What do you, I can't even imagine.
Like, what is this anachronism of your past?
Seriously. Well, I actually I pitched this to somebody else. I said, like, could you imagine? And this isn't even that far removed. Like, guys on my baseball team where one guy's 30, and I don't think he's ever done this. Have you, Don, ever rewound a cassette tape?
Yeah, you use the end of an eraser on a pencil.
with a Bic pen. There you go. Yeah. You use a Bic pen, and that's how you erase it. Of course you did. Why not?
Oh, yeah, man. And I mean, I was barely of that age. I mean, CDs came around. I think one of the few cassette tapes that I had was, I think it was a Simpsons sing-along tape on cassette when I was, I don't know, 8 years old, maybe 10. That's about as far as I go. That's kind of sad.
All right. So, Don, besides the Don.com that you already put out, where can people find you? Twitter, etc.
Yeah, so most of the places you can find me online, it's just Don.com, D-O-N-K-O-M. So you'll find me there on Twitter. Instagram is Don.com Photo. You can find all of the links to that at Don.com.ca, as well as my podcast, which I'm trying to get more and more listeners onto, which is PhotoGeekWeekly.com. And Alan, you've been a guest on that show a number of times, and you always are great company there.
Well, happy to be part of it. All right, Don, thanks a lot for taking the time.
Thank you so much. We'll have some fun. I'm going to have you back on within the next month or two on Photo Geek Weekly, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Your opinions are always great, and I think that there's some fun video stuff coming out soon.
Oh, great. Can't wait to hear it.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
And we're back. What'd you think, man?
Super, super stuff.
It is. Now, do you still read magazines?
No.
No. What do you have in your waiting room? Like, what does Robert Kraft read when he comes in?
there's no way
that's still in the news 2 weeks later, by the way.
There's no way. There's a couple of magazines. I just don't read them.
Yeah. Hold on a sec. Hey, put your shoes on, guys. Yeah, do that first. That's all. That's a good podcast here. I'm trying to get my kids to school. Leaving in 2 minutes here. So you have magazines. You must have like Reader's Digest from 1995.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of those. There's a couple of People magazine, a couple of sports magazines.
With NSYNC on the cover?
Maybe.
It's got to be. The magazines hardly exist anymore, which is sad. Which, again, if you just listen to me and Don for half an hour, you'll know we just talked about that.
Okay.
All right. Challenge for next week. Oh, okay. I meant to tell you, this is your call. So you think about it while I announce the monthly challenge.
Okay.
Monthly challenge for March is a portrait of a semi-stranger, which was inspired by last week's show. And once again, that's just good pod in the background there.
Sure.
Hashtag that Two Hosers Monthly Challenge or hashtag Hey Hosers, and we'll check that out on Instagram. So for next week, Adam, what should we be shooting?
I don't know.
I was going to say spring, but you might not have spring.
No, it doesn't appear as though we are going to have it, but we could try.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking March 17th. That's when the next one's going to air. So, mid March.
I hope so.
Hurry up! We're going to go with spring. Spring is sprung.
Spring.
What if it's not spring?
Then I'll shoot an actual spring.
Okay. Yeah, the spring on your car.
Yeah.
All right. There it is. It's spring right? For next week. Websites. Where can people go to find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca.
And you can find mine at AlanAtridge.com, two of us at twohosers.com, where you can go to find all the links, photos, everything we just talked about. And that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.